Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is February 11th, 2020. And welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. I'm joined by Nicole Thomas, Vice President of Information Services. Hi, Nicole. How are you?
Hello, Michael. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. How about for you?
I got so much to talk about and so little time.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I got a couple things I just want to tell you.
Okay.
Number one is my daughter Stella, first basketball season. And her awards were Sunday. The score was 20 to 1. We had won going into the fourth quarter.
Okay.
That was our last game. We didn't make the playoffs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of the moms there thought we were going to make the playoffs, and I had to remind them that we weren't as good as they thought. But they had the award ceremony afterwards, and she got greatest improved player of the year. And so I was so proud.
That's an awesome accomplishment.
It is. And I in celebration, I bought a fedora hat and I wore it to the office this morning. So,
okay. So you celebrated her accomplishment wearing a fedora.
A lot of us are going to the sweetener colloquium at the end of the month, and I think I'm going to wear the fedora to the sweetener colloquium.
I think you should do that. You should totally do that.
So look out for me.
Add a little flavor to the mix.
Yeah, and I can just tell you,
bring in some flavor with the sugar. I like it.
Absolutely. And you're in Atlanta, so you don't know this, but I walked in this morning and I got zero people outside of myself that really liked that hat.
What?
Yeah.
I need to see a picture.
I tell you what, I'll take a picture after the end of this, and I'll put it on the podcast. How's that?
Okay. Yeah. No, that's okay. That's perfect. Perfect.
So I thought we'd talk today about the WASI report that came out just a few hours ago. And what was the word I was looking for to explain the WASI? What was it, Nicole?
Whoop-de-doo.
WASDE report today. And I thought we'd cover corn and soybeans today. Have you give it a start, because whoop-de-doo on sugar, but it does mean something psychologically, and I'll cover that a little bit later. But talk to us about corn and soybean. What the heck happened?
Well, you know, with corn, it was definitely whoop-de-doo there too. Offsetting changes to ethanol and export demand. So ending stocks unchanged at 1.892 billion bushels. Okay. And the interesting thing with the ethanol, let me start with the exports. We figured that we would see that lower just based on what we've been watching all year. You look at cumulative exports, they're down versus last year by about 52%.
Okay.
South American export shipments have been strong, particularly from Brazil. You know, we had the late harvest here. So they picked up a lot of that demand. So we weren't so much surprised by that. But the ethanol number is interesting only in that, you know, profitability is pretty weak. Export demand, you know, you look at 2019 cumulative exports through November. So we've got, you know, almost full year in. They trailed 2018 by about 15%. Ethanol blending and refining usage is about at parity with last year, but they've been ramping up production. So, with that, a little more in the way of corn use of about 50 million bushels, and all in all, offsetting each other and leaving ending stocks unchanged and stocks to use right where it's been.
So
I know, right? wow. I know it's boring, but goodness.
I'm sorry.
Goodness, Mike.
Let me take my fedora and ask you the next question. And that is, what are the next things we're going to be looking at for corn starting in maybe March and looking forward? Because obviously this report doesn't really have too many great shakes. So what's going to happen in March?
So the next few weeks, I would say really starting now through March, lot of the attention will be on planted acreage. We've talked quite a bit about that.
Right.
Market's anticipating that to be on the higher end, ranging on the low end at like 92, on the high end somewhere around 94 million acres. So just this expectation that those numbers are going to be large. And then, of course, related to that, taking a look at weather, La Nina,
Okay.
Maybe coming back into the mix at some point this year. Question as to whether or not that's, you know, early summer where it would actually be impactful to production potentially, or late in the season or late 2020 where it wouldn't really have much effect at all. And right now, most of the focus on it being wetter than average through at least through the next 4 to 6 weeks, probably staying that way going into April. So people wondering, okay, are we shaping up for another year similar to last year? Don't think we're there right now for sure, but something people will be watching. But I think longer term, especially when you talk about this acreage, potentially, we get a rebound in yield to just a normal trend line. So we're in the 170s compared to, I think we settled at like 168, 169 this past year.
Okay.
We go back to 178 and we're doing, you know, the low end of that 92 and a half, 93 million acres. And we see, you know, maybe a little more strength in exports relative to this past year. We see ethanol usage, you know, near parity, maybe a little stronger, and or we see a continuation of this strength in feed demand that keeps the demand piece of that category pretty strong. You could be looking at a year where we're going into 2021 with, you know, 2.3, 2.4 billion bushels. That's a pretty bearish market scenario.
It is.
So, that's why this, I think this, the next few months and a lot of attention on the weather is going to potentially be, you know, kind of offset by this, this idea of what a great crop could look like in terms of that balance sheet and the pressure it could apply on prices. And then of course, for, you know, from a basis standpoint, that's something that people will want to watch closely to, you know, whether or not these farmers are going to hold out for another few months here in hopes that they get some sort of market rally, weather rally, and move all their or much of their supply at that point, or if they come in a little early because they're looking at a pretty bearish year and decide to let some of their stocks go. So
yeah, and I bet somebody could log into that IQ platform and look at some of our forecasts, or simply call you with some expectations if you're booking corn futures on what to do.
Absolutely,
I might be setting a budget.
Yeah, I know, right? What budgets?
There you go, God. I love McKinney Flavelle.
Speaking of budgets, you want to talk soybeans briefly?
Let's do it.
So
what do you got?
On the soy side, we did see, you know, a 50 million bushel drop to ending stocks for current year. That takes us at 425 million. Ironically, the average farm price, despite that drop in ending stocks, dropped as well by a quarter per bushel to $8.75 a bushel. So the farm price would be the futures price plus, or in this case, minus the basis is what the USDA is trying to gauge there. So they're anticipating that to be even lower with this month's release. Then as far as soybean oil was concerned, ending stocks actually increased by 69 million pounds. Now, funny thing is on the supply side, they reduced production due to lower yield, oil yield per bushel. It's something that we've been talking about a lot on the weekly write-ups on the platform, direct conversations with clients, for folks looking at soybean oil, that the yields have been coming in a lot lower, and probably because we've got some substantial stocks out of that 18-19 year that are going to go deeper into this year than what you would normally see, because we have about double what we would typically have at the end of any given crop year or when we came into 19-20. So you're seeing that there. But then on the flip side, the demand piece was offset as well, or offset some of that with lower demand for biodiesel by 300 million pounds. That was huge. Don't say I disagree with it, because you know, there's definitely this sentiment that some of this is going to turn around with the reinstitution of the biodiesel blending credit. But by the time that kicks in, we're already, you know, a quarter of the way through the crop year. And so I'm thinking from the USDA's perspective, yes, they still anticipate greater usage, but not quite optimistically the degree to which they were thinking, you know, a few months ago, and so reduced that. And food use came down a bit as well, 100 million pounds. And that's, again, sort of related to these the strength in prices that we had seen, at least up until this most recent dip, with some of the influence of some of these extraneous factors on the market. But all in all,
yeah, and
that's where we're at.
I got to ask you, the coronavirus, that obviously is
it comes from beer.
Topic. No, it doesn't. No, it does not. It is a terrible virus over there in China.
It is very much so.
And so we get a lot of questions on this, and maybe for the listeners, can you give your perspective on this and potential impact? I know it's really hard to say, but what will the potential impact be to soybeans and or corn?
Well, first we joke about it, but it is a serious matter. And shouldn't be ignorant. It does not come from beer. It has been very impactful in terms of its impact on life, for sure.
Yeah.
In China, in Wuhan, with I think 2% mortality rate or something of that sort. So it is a significant virus. Now, you know, you got to imagine with the number of people quarantined, with the added scrutiny being given to shipments going in and out of the country, the impact on tourism, et cetera, that it will have some impact on demand. To what degree, we just don't know. And that's just being honest about it.
Yeah.
And I would say a couple of things to keep in mind. Number one, where this outbreak has been, isn't where much of the soy crushing takes place. So in the sense of direct impact to, restricted crush or anything like that, and to a great degree, at least in the U.S. markets, the influence of the fear about coronavirus has been more impactful on soybeans. And that's, to be expected, considering what Chinese exports mean to that portion of U.S. agricultural product demand. So we get it. So on one hand, you got to think in the sense that, in terms of direct consumption, it's not hitting that. Number two, the other thing to consider is in past outbreaks. Now, granted, this is its own outbreak and it's different. The closest thing we can relate it to is something like SARS. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the year of a SARS going back, I think we're about 4 or 5 years back now, and you looked at the, or further back than that, actually, and you look at the impact on demand for, things like soybeans, soybean oil, things like that, it was relatively minimal. Now, they more or less got that under control. I mean, it went for about a year, a little over a year. But they seem to have, have gotten it didn't seem to spread as quickly as what coronavirus is. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
So it can be different, but okay. I would say right now it's more about the market's reaction to what could happen.
Sure.
Kind of sell the rumor at this point and buy the fact once things settle out.
Got it. And that's a good transition to sugar.
Sugar.
So whoop-de-doo sugar, but little changes this month to the WASDE report in February here, which isn't unusual for this time of year.
Right.
But they did make some adjustments to the TRQ. They increased it a little bit and reverse decreased Mexico. So net, there was a little bit of a reduction in imports, which, again, talk about what that means to our current industry. Last month, Kevin did a great analysis and talked a little bit about how with crops, sometimes it's a delayed reaction on the reductions. And we saw last month they reduced Louisiana pretty significantly, and it brought our stocks to use ratios down to 12.7%. For those new listeners, the USDA tries to target that 13.5. And as you all know, we had a few months back some force majeures in the beet industry. So we're dealing with a very tight market. So a report like this, though not eventful in all the categories, the psychological, hey, we're reducing the amount of imports and bringing the stocks to use ratio down to 12.4% is in a tight market. That makes people say, "Oop, it's even tighter." And I think that's the big message from today.
Sure.
Is that particular thing. Now, what does that mean as we move forward? And we rely a lot on Mexico for imports. And those reports you're hearing out of Mexico, they start their crop later in the year, November, December, and imports coming in and their production overall has been lagging behind. So that does have people concerned about getting sugar from Mexico to help in our tight supply situation. And as you know, Nicole, most of that through the suspension agreement is destined for cane refiners.
Right.
So again, tight market. We're going to have to see if Mexico can catch up on their production. We're going to have to see and make sure those imports come in from Mexico. I think the USDA, by adjusting the TRQ up, is basically saying to everyone that, yeah, we understand it's tight. We're going to bring a little bit more. And so our trade partners from around the world can bring in more raw sugar into those refineries as well. So the cane refineries are going to continue to be tight on refining capacity. So expect that.
All right. Definitely.
A lot of people out there are managing their forecasts monthly, quarterly, and until September, it's going to be a tight market. So you're going to have to work with your suppliers. And so the next things for the sugar market to look out for is, number one, like you had talked about, March 30th planting intentions. We're going to see if the beet industry is going to, if the expectation is plant as much as they can and try to catch up on these lower inventories and put the market back in a more, what's the word, Nicole? Reasonable stock levels.
Balance.
A balance. I love it. Yes. So that's the next thing. And as far as negotiations for next year, we got the sweetener colloquium coming up at the end of the month that people are going to see me with my fedora. But we're not expecting too much discussion on negotiations for 2021, because I think a lot of the industry is a wait and see what the beet crop's going to do this year to help us, because beet crop is a big part of our production and consumption domestically.
So, Michael, what do you think as far as like number 16 is concerned then, especially with, you know, still wondering what it exactly we're going to get out of Mexico and anticipate more TRQ imports?
It's a great question. And, you know, through the amended suspension agreements, we have a minimum price and we have a requirement for what comes up and goes to comes up in bulk vessels, which again goes to mainly refiners. And I'd say at this point, when you look at the soft floor that Kevin always talks about, you're really looking at, you know, 27 and a half ish range on the 16. So anything priced below that is really pricing out Mexican sugar coming into the country. So what we do know is there is there are a lot of raws available. The cane industry is asked to pick up the pace and help supply the market. So I don't anticipate anything too crazy on the number 16 market until some of those dynamics change. If Mexico all of a sudden is like, hey man, we don't have any sugar, then you could see that. I think that answers your question.
No bueno.
No bueno. So nothing. I don't expect anything too crazy at this point. You're going to stay in that similar range that we're in now, 26 to 27 and a half ish range.
Awesome.
But, you know, if things don't get better down in Mexico, you can ask me that question again.
Gotcha.
All right. So we wrap it up?
I think we should wrap it up. What are we trying to get folks to participate in this go around?
Well, seats are limited to our spring seminar on April 29th.
Oh, yeah.
You can register online. That's like I practiced that. so go ahead and register online, McKinney-Flavelle.com. All kinds of great speakers. Nicole will be doing autographs. You'll meet the new guy, Eric. I mean, it's just an awesome one-day conference.
We've got some good panels shaping up, too. We're going to be talking about, like, meatless protein and CBD and hemp and
all the sugar reduction you're alternatives. Talking about. Yeah, it's going to be
all kinds of good stuff.
And I heard from Pete, our marketing guy, there's going to be some pretty cool swag. So
There's always cool swag. Yeah, hey, I got an idea here.
Sure.
So you're going to be at the colloquium shortly, right?
Yes.
And you're going to rock that fedora.
Yes. Right? Yes.
I think if people take a picture with you in your fedora and send that picture to the Inquirer email address, then we would be willing to give them a small discount.
I think it's a great idea.
On their spring seminar admission. What do you think about that? I love it.
I like it. I like it. Inquire at McKinney-Flavelle.com. Take your picture with me in the fedora and get a discount to the seminar. Unbelievable. I like it.
Off the fly.
Great idea, Nicole. Well, we're going to wrap this one up. It's amazing. We're going to wrap this one up. Thank you guys for listening. As I always like to say, live with an attitude of gratitude. Enjoy every moment with your friends, your family. And until next time, Take care, everybody.
Cheers.
Bye now.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.